What did you have for breakfast this morning? Or if you have children, what did your children have for breakfast this morning? Let's see. We had some cereal this morning, granola with bananas and with blueberries.
Did you know we were doing this show, Larry, or is that just what you eat?
That's the normal, pretty much at least 5 days a week, usually about 5 days a week. And then weekends, we usually, it's pancakes or something like that. Sue Nitzky, by the way, is that other voice there. Larry Mueller. Sue's a professor of nutritional sciences, actually chairs the Department of Nutritional Sciences at the UW-Madison, with us today to talk about breakfast, picking a good breakfast for you and for your children. And I hope you'll join in if you have some questions or comments as we move along here today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And email us at talk@wpr.org. We always get lots of emails, too, so feel free to do that as well. And Sue, the news isn't all good when it comes to children's breakfast cereals.
Well, you can look at it that the glass is half full, Larry. There's lots of good choices out there. But the ones, there was actually a study done just in the last few months, or reported in the last few months by some researchers at Yale, who showed that the cereals that are heavily marketed to children versus cereals that are just marketed to the general public actually turn out to be higher in calories and sugar and sodium and lower in fiber and protein. So it's sort of like they pick the junkiest cereal and say, hey, kids, this is for you. And as a nutritionist, of course, I think it should be the other way around.
Yeah. And but there are some good ones out there.
Yes, there are. And Consumer Reports did an article in, I think it was the October issue, that kind of rated some of the cereals and talked about how it's not hard to make a good choice, but you need to take a couple minutes at the store and take a look at the label and see how high sugar is on the ingredient list and how it shows up in the Nutrition Facts panel. Probably the two things I would look at on the Nutrition Facts panel are the fiber and the sugar per serving. And then you look at that and say, okay, is this what I want to be eating, or is this what I want my family to be eating? And there's some other probably criteria that go along with that, how good it tastes and if you like the texture and if it's affordable, et cetera, and then put in your cart what you actually want.
And then, you know, when they list, for example, sugar in serving, they usually list, how do they list that? They don't list it in teaspoons or they?
No, it's in grams.
Grams, which is always, well, it's hard for some of us to.
Well, here you go, Larry. I brought one of those multi-packs.
Yeah, all kinds of things. Yeah,
multi-pack. I did. For those people listening, we have this whole big counter here spread out with cereals that I'm going to refer to as we're talking. But I picked one of those multi-packs that has sort of a little of everything.
Oh,
and on the
my
top,
goodness.
It has the Nutrition Facts panel for each of those cereals. So, Larry, you'll see in about the middle of the column, it says carbohydrate, and under that it says dietary fiber, and it says sugars.
And we're looking at everything from 2 grams up to, here's 11, 13, 8, 14, 3,
right.
3, 2.
And that's very typical of the whole cereal aisle. You'll find them from zero added sugar, which is really quite rare. It's pretty much things like shredded wheat.
Oatmeal.
Oatmeal, of course.
Yeah.
To the, but not all kinds of oatmeal, actually. No. You have to pay attention. And then the high sugar cereals tend to have about 15 grams, which is about a half ounce of sugars per serving. So you might think about at least staying below the middle of that range.
Yeah, I can. that's amazing just to look at this, the difference. Here's 1 gram. Kellogg's Corn Flakes is, I'm sorry, take that back. 2 grams. For Kellogg's Corn Flakes and 13 grams for Frosted Flakes.
Right. So, and that's a great comparison, Larry. We could talk about that for just a second. If you would take a bowl of Corn Flakes and, you know, put milk on it and eat it, then that comparison is perfect. So, but if you would take your bowl of regular Corn Flakes and put sugar on it,
oh, man.
And if you wouldn't put sugar on your Frosted Flakes, then you would actually have to think about, well, how much sugar am I going to end up with in the end? And they'd probably be comparable. And the reason is that the Frosted Flakes have the sugar on the surface, so it tastes sweet when it's in your mouth, and it doesn't kind of get lost in all that milk. So if you're the kind of person that adds sugar to your cereal, then the ones with the frosted, by the time you buy them and then you don't add cereal, it, you know, it varies from person to person, but it's probably not a big deal of a difference. But if you actually have learned to enjoy the flavor of plain cereal with milk, then that's perfect. Then if that would be the one to go for.
My wife does not include a sugar bowl anywhere.
On the table. Lots of people do that, and I endorse that for sure. In fact, I have a friend who I was at her house for just a meeting one day, and she served us all tea, and somebody wanted something sweet to put in their tea. She had to get out a stool and go climb up to the top shelf of her cupboard where she kept, you know, a little bit of sugar for emergencies, but it just never showed up on her table.
Lots of people want to visit with you, so let's go to Keith. Keith in Middleton first. Keith, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question about protein versus carbohydrates in the morning.
Sure.
I've always found that carbohydrates just don't give me the boost that I need in the morning. I'm in construction. And if I have, say, like an egg and ham sandwich, it's going to give me a lot more energy early in the morning than a bowl of cereal. Plus, a bowl of cereal is usually digested within probably an hour. Mm-hmm. And it seems to sustain my energy further with protein. I'd just like to know the difference between the two.
Yeah, Keith, it's obviously not that simple. As an academic, I'm sorry, I have to do this. You're probably reporting a combination of comparing something that has more protein and more fat and more overall calories.
Oh, okay.
So an egg and ham, I think you said, sandwich. I would say typically would be somewhere between 500 and 1,000 calories, whereas a bowl of cereal with milk would be probably more in the range of 200 calories. So, you know, the fillingness that you report after the egg and ham sandwich might be a function partly of the fact that you just had more calories in the morning, and also when you have a very low-fat, low-protein breakfast, like a bowl of cereal with skim milk might end up being, you are right that your body can process that very quickly, and you might get hungry sooner.
Yeah.
So some people then either use a little more milk, or maybe they have some whole wheat toast with peanut butter or some butter or something like that, just to kind of balance out the protein, carbohydrates, and fat. There's, you know, different combination in the world. But the peanut butter toast is one I would heartily endorse, so that your bowl of cereal and the peanut butter toast would have a little more fillingness for to get you through till lunchtime.
Be good.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Keith, for calling. Appreciate it. Good thing to experiment on, Keith. Let's go to Mike in Castle Rock. Hi, Mike.
What are your thoughts on Kellogg's All Bran?
Kellogg's All Bran.
Well, do you want to say more about why you're asking?
I don't have a cereal per se for breakfast, but I use All Bran in making bran muffins frequently, and you know, it seems to cover every vitamin known to man here.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. I have All Bran in my cupboard for the same reason. I do like to make bran muffins, and I find the easiest recipe is the one where you start with All Bran cereal. And it doesn't have to be Kellogg's. They're pretty comparable no matter which manufacturer. They do tend to have some sugar added, so you might check the label and see if that's what you want. Whether you actually enjoy it for breakfast is partly a function of how you've learned to enjoy that texture. And a lot of people, you know, Americans tend to only get about half of the fiber that's recommended on a daily basis. And breakfast is a very good time to start with something that has at least a little fiber in it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a whole wheat cereal or a whole oat cereal or something that starts with whole grain as the first ingredient is what I would recommend. And if you want to go all the way to a highly bran-enriched cereal, that's great. The fact that it has lots of vitamins and minerals added, the one that we happen to have in front of us, Larry, is probably Special K. Yeah, but there's a bajillion of them total, et cetera. You know, if I want a vitamin pill with my breakfast, I'll take a vitamin pill with my breakfast. I'd just as soon not have something that is promoted as saying you need to eat 12 bowls of this other guy's cereal to get all the vitamin X that is in my cereal. Well, that's because they added it, and I don't think that's fair. So I'm not totally impressed by all the vitamins and minerals that are added. Of course, the ones that are used for enrichment are a good idea because we rely on those as part of our food supply. But I think, like all good things, you can go overboard with making breakfast into a supplement.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate it. Bill in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Larry?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I had a question for Sue. I'm not exactly sure how, I guess you could say, current on major business moves you are, Sue, but I just was wondering, I'm in the 80s, well, I was born in the 70s, but, you know, I grew up in the 80s. When I was a kid, it seems that companies paid more attention to taste of food as far as, you know, being good and less to profits, I guess. But I was wondering, did the cereal in the 80s, did they have more sugar in them than they do, like, you know, all the sweet cereals right now that the kids eat?
Right.
Do they have less sugar in them now than they did, like, back in the 80s? Did the company stop putting as much sugar in the food?
Yeah.
Well, Bill, the answer to that is yes and no. It really depends on which cereal you're looking at. Many of the cereals have been recently reformulated, and the companies changed their ingredient lists a little bit over the years. And I do agree that probably these higher-end sugar-added cereals and the ones with all the colors and marshmallows and all of that, it seems like there's more of them than ever. But I think overall you'll find some that have gotten better over the years as far as how much sugar is added, et cetera, and some that have gotten worse. And one of the reasons for that might surprise you. There's a national program called WIC, the Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, that gives low-income families, mothers and babies and children up to age 5, coupons to go to the store and well, actually, these days it's a benefit card. Looks like a little credit card. And they can go to the store and buy nutritious food for their family. And they're specifically targeted to provide certain nutrients. And so what I'm getting to here is that if you are a low-income family and buying the cereals that you can use that your WIC card to purchase, those have to be low in sugar. So a lot of the companies have formulated their products to make sure that their sugar content is low enough to be eligible for WIC, because then their overall sales have a higher market.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So to get back to your original question, the companies pretty much put out there what people want to buy. And that's why you see this tremendous range. We have people who are so interested in health, they'll eat something that looks like a bowl of sticks. And then you have people that just don't give a rip and whatever the kids will eat and la, 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 and it looks like a bowl of candy. So, and everything in between. And that's because people will buy different things and the companies will put out what people will buy.
Yeah. All right. Bill, thanks. Appreciate the call. Sue Nitzke, professor and chair of the Department of Nutritional Sciences at the UW-Madison, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about how to pick a good breakfast for you and your children with Sue Nitzke, professor, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist. She chairs the Department of Nutritional Sciences. Give us a call with your question at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Cindy in Menominee next. Cindy, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've heard that cereal is made in a vat or, you know, something like that, and then put through a small opening to make the different shapes or flakes or whatever that may be high pressure.
Right, that's called extrusion.
Oh, sorry?
It's called extrusion.
Yes, and that it might change the molecular structure of the food and not be so good for us, actually. Do you know anything? I haven't been able to find much information about
that. It changes the texture of the final product. So if you want to make something puffy like Cheerios, you mix up this, it's called a slurry, and you push it through this opening, like you're saying, under pressure, that makes it kind of puff up and pop. It's like making popcorn, only you don't use heat. It doesn't change the molecular structure of the ingredients. It changes the texture of the product that comes out the other end. So it just is a way of making it puffy. And Larry, we have some Cheerios right here.
Mm-hmm.
We have some Honey Nut Cheerios and some regular Cheerios. And,
all right. Well, I'll grab a Cheerio while we're talking.
Those are two examples of a pretty, things that have been extruded or processed that way. Those puffy cereals like Corn Pops and that sort of thing are other examples. I wouldn't worry about it ruining the nutrition of the product. I think the information on the Nutrition Facts panel and the ingredient list is still your best guide.
Well, I'll tell you what, those Honey Nut Cheerios are a lot sugarier than the regular Cheerios.
That's right. So that's where that principle that I mentioned before, if you would take Honey Nut Cheerios and just put milk on them and eat them straight, then it's not particularly high in sugar. And actually, that Consumer Reports article that you referred to at the beginning of the show actually included Honey Nut Cheerios as one of their very good rating cereals. I think partly because either kind is made with whole oats as the first ingredient.
Oh.
So you need to look for products that are whole grain as kind of one of your best indications of what's a good basis for breakfast. And that gives me a chance to mention something I'd rather have you not look at, and that's all the information on the front of the box where it says made with whole grain or endorsed by this or that or the other organization, or little check marks or little boxes. To me, the front of the package is allowed to be pretty much, if it's true, you can say it, as long and it's there for the marketing, the pictures of the cartoon characters, etc. What I want you to do, Cindy, and everybody else, is turn the box over or on its side and look at the Nutrition Facts panel. That's where you'll find how many grams of sugar in a serving, how many grams of fiber in a serving. And under that or on the other side, you'll probably find the ingredient list. Those are very tightly regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. You have to, when you make a product, you have to list the ingredients in order by weight, no exceptions. So if the first ingredient, I'm looking at mini wheats right now, the first ingredient is whole grain wheat, that has to be the biggest proportion of what's inside that box. And then in order by weight. So if the second and third and fourth ingredient are some kind of sugar, then, that might be your clue that you better look at the Nutrition Facts panel and see how high it is. And I'll mention one more thing, Larry. I think you've heard me say this before. My pet peeve is calling sugar evaporated cane juice. The products that market themselves as particularly healthy tend to say that they're natural. And if you look at the ingredient list, they say the word sugar is never there in the ingredient list. It's evaporated cane juice or crystallized cane juice or something like that. That's just another word for sugar, so don't be fooled by that. And all of those things still count for sugar on the Nutrition Facts panel. So that's why looking at that sugar value on the Nutrition Facts panel is a really good indication of what you're getting.
You know, there's a new pyramid out. Well, it's not a new pyramid. It's a pyramid for preschoolers. My pyramid for preschoolers. I went online and just typed that in, and it popped up from the USDA.
Right, and that's a wonderful tool. It was just actually unveiled over this past weekend in Chicago at the American Dietetics Association's annual conference. People at the U.S. Department of Agriculture have been getting requests from people like me a lot, saying, we have a lot of good educational materials and a lot of good resources for adults and school-age kids, but there's not as much good stuff out there for preschoolers. So they got to work and got some excellent experts together, pediatricians and nutritionists who work with little kids, and they came out with the My Pyramid for preschoolers. If you just go to the web and put in mypyramid.gov, the first thing that'll come up is there'll be a box on the right where it says My Pyramid for preschoolers, and you can go in there and you can explore. You can actually,
a lot in there.
Oh, gosh, you can go in there and you can put in your child's age and height and weight and gender, and you can see how their body mass index or their weight for age or their weight for their height compares to other kids their age and recommendations. You can put in daily intakes and see how it compares with recommended nutrients or food groups for kids their age. You get lots of tips from every food group, so you can learn about how you're recommended to work whole grain into your daily diet and how to pick out cereals, for instance. And each food group, the fruits and vegetables and grains and meats and milk, all there's tips there for all of the food groups. Whether you're a caregiver or a parent or a grandparent or just somebody who likes little kids, I didn't encourage you to take a look at it. Yeah.
It's fun. Someone else emailed in or called in and said, I wondered if you'd touch on federally funded school breakfast program and its willingness to provide sugared products like breakfast bars and such to kids on the basis of this is what they will eat.
I think that's, you know, that's a great example of what we're always dealing with. The school breakfast program, the school lunch program, and what's in the vending machines at school and all of that, they all should be covered by the school's nutrition and physical activity policies that are required by law to be set with the advice of a group of advocates and, you know, parents and educators and so forth, a school health or wellness council. And the school breakfast program, of course, is subsidized by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it's a great way to make sure that kids who might not otherwise take time or have food available to eat in the morning get something to eat. Breakfast is an important meal, and the schools are helping kids get some kind of breakfast. But many of the items offered in school breakfast do have sugar in them. And if enough parents were concerned, and if the school wellness council wanted to take a look at that, I would encourage that. Mm-hmm. They're usually not extreme. You know, I don't think you'll find Fruit Loops and that sort of thing. But sometimes you'd be surprised that there can be some pretty sugary items, and that's because that's the kids take them readily. So there's always a sort of balancing act. Well, at least they're getting some milk and la, la, la. But I would especially endorse the school breakfast programs that work hard to keep the sugar intake low.
Let's go to Alice in Menominee. We just lost a question about vitamin D, which is too bad. But Alice in Menominee's up next here with a question, so let's go there.
Good morning. I try to follow a low-carb diet, and so when I go to a grocery store, I am rather amazed that 75 to 80% of everything in the store is high-carb. So when I look for bread or ice cream or something like that, there are some that are manufactured with what they call Splenda. And I want to know more about Splenda. You know, tell me more about it. Do you recommend it? And are some of these food manufacturers of breakfast foods beginning to go in that direction?
The Food and Drug Administration has approved a number of, some people call them artificial sweeteners or intense sweeteners. They're very, very low in calories for the amount of sweetness that you perceive when you eat them. And Splenda is one of them. And it's marketed as tastes like sugar because it's made from sugar. And a lot of the people with competing products really hate that because it's, you know, it's heavily manufactured just like the other ones. It's not really all that natural. But it's been extensively tested for safety, and it's a way that a lot of people can help keep their sugar intake down. The Dietary Guidelines for Americans in My Pyramid do not encourage or discourage the use of these sweetener products. It's a choice. If you don't like them, don't use them. If if it helps you actually manage your calorie intake, and a lot of us really are working on that, then that's one tool that you can use. And it'll show up in especially beverages, but just about every kind of product that might have carbohydrates in it would be available in an alternative form that's sweetened with one of these products. A product that's about to be approved is called Stevia, and I think there'll be lots of questions about that product when it comes on the market. It may be even in the next few weeks. It's actually an extract of a leaf of a plant that came from South America originally. It's also been tested for safety, and I don't know, a couple of kind of esoteric tests show some reasons for concern, which might be why FDA is taking so long. But I think most people think that it's probably quite safe. The first thing that you mentioned, Alice, is that you're on a low-carb diet. Could you say why?
Family has tendency toward diabetes, and so I'm trying to have a low profile.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would certainly endorse being very careful about your nutrition if you have a tendency for diabetes in your family, or even, you know, being a nutritionist, I think everybody should be careful of their nutrient intake. I think the low-carb, I'll call it a fad because I think it was a fad, has sort of come and gone, and now people are more talking in terms of good carbs and bad carbs, which has a little sometimes has a little bit of hype in with it as well. I think really that's why I like people to go to mypyramid.gov and just get the good basic advice about balancing your intake of protein, carbohydrates, and fat. None of them are good in excess. And I think a diet that has all the food groups and is low, according to the dietary guidelines, the things to manage are your added sugars and your solid fats. So the solid fats are things like butter and bacon and the meat fats that tend to be solid at room temperature, and some of the hard margarines. Keeping those low and keeping your intake of things with added sugars. So we're not telling you not to eat fruit, but we are telling you to do what we're talking about today, Larry. Mm-hmm. Look at the label and see how much sugar is added to these products, and then pick the ones with lower added sugars. That I think, in the long run, is a more productive way of keeping your risk of diabetes low, keeping your weight in a reasonable range, and just having an overall healthy nutrient intake. And, Larry, I could talk about vitamin D real quick, because you said we lost a caller who mentioned vitamin D. It's probably the exciting nutrient of this generation. We have some excellent researchers on this campus who have done wonderful studies to show that in Wisconsin, in these northern parts of the country, it's really hard to get enough sunshine, especially when you use sunscreen, to keep your body to manufacture enough of its own vitamin D. So it's an important nutrient to make sure you're getting enough of. And because it has something to do with calcium and how well it gets into your bones, I would encourage especially all the older women in your listening audience to ask their doctor for a blood test, and then they'll know if they need to take supplemental vitamin D.
Several emails have come our way. Susan wonders whether or not you could address the topic of sugar alcohols, how they are marketed or labeled on ingredient lists, and how sugar alcohols impact blood sugar levels.
Sugar alcohols, sorbitol, mannitol, xylitol, erythritol, there's a whole range of them. If you reach in your pocket or your purse and pull out a package of sugar-free gum, you'll probably see two or three of these ingredients listed. They're in some of the sugar-free candies as well. Their benefits are that they tend to be lower in calories than other regular sugars. They do not stimulate the blood sugar levels in the same way that other sugars do. And they are very good for your teeth in that they don't encourage the growth of those bacteria in your mouth that make acid that ultimately wears away the enamel on your teeth. So for a number of reasons, they're handy. If you have an excess intake of some of these products, especially all at one time, some people report that it causes some gastrointestinal upset or diarrhea. Most people can have a couple sticks of sugar-free gum and not notice the difference, and so I wouldn't get too excited about that. But like a lot of other things in nutrition, you can have too much of a good thing.
Charlie from Madison wonders what you think about the Kashi brands of mm-hmm. cereals and oatmeals. I'm not sure how kid-friendly they are or the sugar mm-hmm. content for that matter, but they have a lot of protein, fiber, and they taste great, Charlie
yeah,
says.
If you look at the, this is one of the cereals that might actually mention evaporated cane juice in their ingredient list. I have some at home. They tend to be a little expensive. I do like their shredded wheat type product. It's not as high in sugar as frosted shredded wheat. It's not as low in sugar as plain shredded wheat. So it's sort of in the middle, and I think it tastes sweet enough for me. It's personal preference, and if you think it's affordable and you like it, but I wouldn't look to it as like, oh, this is the good cereal and the other cereals are the bad cereals. I'd encourage you to do the same thing I just mentioned. Look at the nutrition facts panel and see if the nutritional value and, of course, for your own personal preferences, the taste and texture and such are such that you would enjoy them. And they're a wonderful choice, but by no means the ultimately good choice.
Julie has this question. She's been avoiding buying foods with high fructose corn syrup, but had bought some of the high fiber cereal and granola bars made by General Mills. Some of the cereals list having 50% of the fiber you need for a day. But is it worth the fiber to have the high fructose corn syrup? Do you have any comments on that?
I'm so glad that came up, Larry, because there's so much misunderstanding that I find about high fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup really has a composition that is very similar to sugar. So it's not like sugar is the good sweetener and high fructose corn syrup is the bad sugar. To me, they are so comparable that they're interchangeable nutritionally. If you have a product that's sweetened with sugar, you don't want to have too much of it. And if you have a product that's sweetened with high fructose corn syrup, you don't want to have too much of it. The way they affect your body is very similar, and I would encourage your listeners to just regard high fructose corn syrup as another form of added sugar, just like we talked about sucrose or evaporated cane juice, or some might be surprised that I'd put honey in that category. It's really just another good tasting but easily overdone product that can add extra calories if you don't keep an eye on it.
And then before we go back to the phones, one more. Carl in Madison says food pantries often dispense 5-pound bags of sugar-coated but otherwise nutritious cereal. I rinse a large bowl, my morning breakfast, with cold water 2 or 3 times, add milk, and then chow down. My favorite is a whole wheat flake that stays very crispy even after ruthless rinsing. What do you think about that idea?
Well, that works for him. That's fine. That brings up what I said before. Having the sugar concentrated on the surface is actually a way to make the sweet flavor come through. But you're right. Some of these frosted this and that have a little too much of that. And so if it works for this caller to rinse it off first and it doesn't ruin the texture, that's one way to deal with it.
Delbert in Muskego, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. One thing or an item that really got my attention, or two of them, I guess, was of course, the sugared sodas and then pure maple syrup. The sugared sodas had about, anywhere from 30 to 36 grams of sugar, and there's 4 grams in 1 teaspoon. So that's about, 9 teaspoons in 1 can. But the one that really knocked my hat off was pure maple syrup, a very good quality pure maple syrup that had 53 grams of sugar per serving. Mm-hmm. I almost couldn't believe it. It's like 13 teaspoons or something like that. Amazing.
For the amount, Delbert, for the amount of sweetness that you get, maple syrup, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, they're very interchangeable. They all have about the same amount of calories and the same effect on your body.
Okay.
I tend to love pure maple syrup on my pancakes.
I like it
but
on
it's
ice cream.
You know, it's not the good sweetener versus the bad sweetener. You know, that's another myth, right along with honey, that people think is it's just so natural. It came from a plant that grows in Wisconsin. It must be good for you.
Yeah.
Some people find that it actually has a more kind of satisfying flavor, mm-hmm. so they feel like they don't have to use as much. I don't know that that's been documented, and I wouldn't put just too much credence in that, but if it works for you, that might be a factor. But I don't know. It's pretty expensive, so it's another choice for sweeteners. As long as you don't use too much, enjoy it when you use it.
I think the problem with some of this is that it shows the amount per serving, that many times I think that a person eats more than just a serving.
Well, is a serving 2 tablespoons? Do you have it in front of you?
Oh, no. I'm just saying, for instance, say even like on a cereal where it'll say so many grams, you know, per serving. But the serving seems like in some cases very small, and you might have a tendency to be eating more, so you almost got to multiply that out a little bit. But
that's a great point, Delbert. The Consumer Reports articles in the November issue that Larry mentioned actually looked, they gave a bunch of kids ages 6 to 16 cereal and told them to pour out in a bowl how much they would eat, and most of the kids poured 1.5 times mm-hmm. what is the amount that's considered a serving.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the what I recommend for parents is just give your kids a small bowl so it looks like you have enough to eat. And then if they want more, they'll pour some more. But so that actually, portion size is just such an important principle when we're talking about nutrition. You want to pick a good product, and then you don't want to overeat anything, even some of the stuff that's really good for you.
I just wonder sometimes whether or not, I guess I didn't think about it for a long time until I checked into it, but when they look at the number of grams per serving, whether or not people really relate that to the number of teaspoons, to me that makes more of an eye-opener when you say, wow, that's got 9 teaspoons in that one 12-ounce can.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if people really think of that, you know?
Right. Our nutrition educators often point that out to people, and then they go, oh, my gosh, who knew? So so if it means more to you to talk about in terms of teaspoons rather than grams, that's an excellent way to point that out.
Yeah, and 2 grams is a teaspoon?
4.
4 grams, I'm sorry. Yeah, 4 grams is a teaspoon.
It's 4 point something.
Yeah, but...
Of sugar.
Yeah, of sugar, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well... Delbert, I thank you very much for calling. And Sue, I thank you very much, too. Boy, I got to have some Cheerios and learned quite a bit about breakfast cereals. Hope we can do this again.
I'd love to.
All right. Thank you so much. Sue Nitzke, Professor, UW Extension Nutritional Scientist, our guest today, as we talked with her about picking a good breakfast for you and your family. And I'll tell you what, take a look at that Nutrition Facts label. And that's going to help you an awful lot when it comes to comparing one breakfast cereal against another. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking about a new book out. It's part of the On the Road histories, and this one is titled Wisconsin. Our guest, Mark Van Elst, coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.